Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. We've got a great show for you this week. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest from Fargo, North Dakota, we've got Jaden Thomas back on the show. Jaden is a fishing department manager over at Shields in Fargo. And, you know, Jaden, this guy's a fish head. Any opportunity I get to talk to him, it's so much fun. The energy level is high and very positive all the time. Jaden's always got a smile on his face if he's talking about fishing, and it's very contagious. And this show, we cover a lot of ground. We're going to talk about, you know, kind of the art or the dance behind putting fall fishing to bed for a lot of people. Just some other really great fishy conversation topics. And, you know, we're going to round this out on the back half with some great early ice conversation. Jaden's got a lot of fun, cool things to talk about there. So just a really great, really fishy conversation here with a young fish head out of Fargo, North Dakota. That's Jaden Thomas. You're listening to the JMO Podcast. And wherever you're getting the show, whether you're listening on YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get a podcast, head down to the comment sections. Let us know what you like, don't like. Let us know if you got any recommendations for a topic for an upcoming show or a guest, of course. You know, any of that feedback has just been a ton of fun to interact with everybody. And, you know, we've had some great guest suggestions that have come on the show and gotten some really, really good feedback. So that's what it's all about, everybody. If you're listening, if you're learning a little bit of something, you're getting inspired by something, it's making you think about anything fishing related that you weren't thinking before, then we're getting our point across. So anything along those lines, any questions you want us to go into more detail on certain topics, you know, hit us up, hit up our guests, of course. And, you know, ahead of holiday season, head over to Jason Mitchell Outdoors, hit the apparel tab, check out some merch. You know, anybody in your family that's a JMO fan or anybody that just likes to go fishing, you know, heading into this and next ice season, anybody would love to get a Christmas present with a little JMO merch in there. So head over, check that stuff out. We totally appreciate it if you want to take the opportunity to support the show. That being said, let's get into this interview with Jaden Thomas. We're talking all things fishing this time of year.
Hello?
Jaden.
Taylor. How's it going?
It's going good, man. How are you doing?
Doing good. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate you having some time on short notice. Yeah, man. You've been doing a little bit of fishing. What's the update on what things have been shaking up for you this fall?
It was really good, man. Like end of September through all of October was phenomenal. But unfortunately, I had to cut her a little short. I hurt my arm, so.
Oh dang!
I'm trying to get healed up for ice. Yeah, I literally. I went to the doctor on Monday. They said it's either a stress fracture in my elbow or the worst case of tennis elbow they've ever seen. And it's the direct result of rip jigging. I've been rip jigging so much since August. It just steadily got worse and worse to the point where I was out fishing in Brainerd last week with my buddy Hayes, and I couldn't cast. It hurt that bad, so I had to go get it checked out. So they're treating it as a tennis elbow right now, but they said come back in 2 weeks and we'll x-ray it and see if it's worse.
Yeah. I mean, is that a deal where you're just a little bit too married to one hand? I mean, can you slide over left-handed, or what's the deal with that?
I think I could. I don't know. I've never really tried. I'm just so confident in ripping with my right hand. I was slinging jigging wraps from August all through end of September, and then I switched to pitching jigs, and just I set the hook so hard. She kind of started to give out on me. Yeah, just too many hook sets.
Dang, dude, that's wild. Say, I kind of wanted to start this off with kind of a full recap of your fall. I know you're a fish head. I mean, last time we had you on, we were kind of talking late ice. So this is kind of, the contrast of that. Now we're talking to you a different transitional season, fall to early ice. But that being said, man, talk about your fall. I mean, you know, Mother Nature is trying to tell you to hang it up with a bum elbow or whatever. But besides that, as far as the fishing, were you pretty satisfied with the fishing? How did it all go for you?
Oh, it was phenomenal, Taylor. I say the fall bite really started for me that last week of September. I saw water temps. Water temps typically for me for fall, I get really excited about kind of that early fall bite when water temps dip below 65. But this year, we had such a hot summer all throughout June, July, August, and early September. It kind of, those high temps kind of carry over in the later fall. You know, everything was probably about 2 or 3 weeks behind schedule, which kind of tied very well into how the spring went. Everything was like 2 or 3 weeks ahead of schedule. So those water temps dip, and instead of dipping really fast, usually I see that it, once it gets below 70, usually week by week, you can count on it dropping about 2 or 3 degrees. This year, it kind of just stayed hung around 64 to 68, probably the last week of September till about mid-October. And what was really nice, at least what I found in the lakes I fish, it dipped low enough where a lot of those really thick, clumpy weeds started to die off, but it left really nice standing cabbage and coontail, left the weed beds really sparse where you had enough standing cover to hold bait fish and in turn hold walleyes, but it was sparse enough you could fish through it effectively. And I mean, all throughout end of September, all throughout October, my best bites were all less than 15 feet of water. I think one day we were rigging minnows. We got them in like 15 to 19, but other than that, everything was pitching jigs or long line and lindies in like less than 12 feet of water. And it was phenomenal. So many big fish we caught this fall.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's awesome. Would you say, I mean, if you look back on it objectively, I mean, I know you're a, you know, you're a fish head. I mean, you're always paying attention. Is there anything about this year that might have been a little bit unique or something just kind of fun that stuck out for you about this particular year? Maybe it's something that you learned, or maybe it was some conditions, right? Like the whole Midwest was kind of in a drought condition. Is there anything unique about the fall bite of 2021, the walleye bite over in your part of the world where you were fishing that just kind of sticks out?
Yeah, just how good it was for so long. And I think that ties in with how warm it got and how warm it was all throughout the summer. Like I said, if you go back to probably mid-June, by the second week of June in the lakes I fish and a lot of other area lakes, I mean, the water temps were already like above 72. They were like 72 to 78 degrees, which that is hot. That's hot water, especially for early June. So that forced fish deeper, quicker and earlier than I've seen in years past. And it also forced them to stay out in deep water a lot longer throughout the summer than usual. Now, you'll always have some fish that stay shallow, right? We've all heard that. A lot of us know that. And typically those are your biggest fish. But for most of the summer, I was finding the bulk of the population of walleyes, at least where I fish. And even when I take trips out to like west of Cockalee or went to the Devils, a lot of fish I found were out in that, you know, 20 plus feet for most of the year. And that's kind of where they found their comfortable temp. What I've noticed fishing walleyes, I use a camera a lot, especially when I'm deep, just to kind of see where fish at. But I have a camera that reads water temperature, right? And I've noticed everywhere I found walleyes deep, it seemed consistently they were hanging around where that water temp was anywhere from 60 to kind of 66 degrees. That seemed like the money temp. And for most of the summer, that money temp was 20, 25 plus feet of water. So those fish were out deep for a majority of the year. And that kind of cut out some of their food source they use early in the season. Like early in the season, you have May through June. Where I'm at, you have a lot of shiner-focused bites, leech-focused bites, perch-focused bites. When they slide deep, early, you don't have the big groves of perch usually until later in the summer, like around August. So what they're forced to feed on most of the summer then was like invertebrates, bug hatches, and that's great. You know, the walleyes, they love that. They feed on it hard. It's part of their natural cycle. But I mean, the bigger walleyes and big's objective, when I think big walleyes, I think anything over like 22, 23 inches, that's kind of the real fighting walleyes, you know, those 4 to 7 pound fish, those picture fish, I like to call them.
Yep.
They like to eat, you know, bigger perch, bullheads, sunfish, you know, they're predators. They want to eat other fish. And the water was so hot, they weren't able to chase a lot of those preferred bait fish until that water cooled off and they were able to slide back up in the shallows, where that shallow water, instead of it being, you know, like bath water, you know, 72 to 80 degrees, it was that money temp. It was that mid-60s. You know, like I said, I found a lot of 65, 68 degree water temp mid-September, and it held through till about mid the end of October. So I think those fish, once it got in that money temp and they could go back up into that shallower water, they knew it was time to make up for
kind of that lost forage they couldn't feed on for most of the summer. And they fed so hard. Like it was incredible. It got to the point where just during the week in October, middle of the week, I get off work at 3 or 4. I grab my cousin who got done with school at 2:30. We'd run out just for 3 hours. And we were consistently putting 15, 20 walleyes in the boat just in like 3-4 hours of fishing in the afternoon. And all the fish were like 20 to 26 inches. It was so much fun. They were so aggressive. They were feeding so hard. And just seeing on social media, seeing that was common for a lot of people throughout the Midwest and the walleye belt here.
You know, for you then, I mean, putting this open water season to bed, you know, for you, there's one kind of like, I don't know, I have these conversations with people a lot, kind of revolves around those internal goals. It's like, gosh, did I really do enough? Can I really be happy sitting all winter long, you know, with the effort that I put in? I mean, for you, you know, do you feel like you reached some of your goals? What was some of the stuff that you kind of had in mind coming into this fall season? What were some of those tails that you were chasing and did you get them?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you asked that because I really did accomplish a goal. So let's go back to that end of September. I had a tournament, I think 4 or 5 weeks September this year? That doesn't matter. But the end of September, I had a tournament, and it was on a local lake that I fished for years. It's kind of my home body of water. And I'm done consistent in it, and I did feel like I knew the lake pretty well. I kind of could figure out what kind of bites are going on. And going into it, we had a good pre-fish, and we ended up doing pretty well. We ended up got 10th with 12 fish for about 40 pounds. But we got absolutely destroyed by first place. First place had 12 fish for, I think, 78 pounds.
Jeepers.
They averaged, day one, they had 6 fish for 44 pounds in the first, like, half hour. And then day two, they had another, I think it was like 32 or 34 pounds in the first 2 hours. And our program was, we were throwing jigging wraps out in like 25 to 40 feet. We're working the deep bite, same for a lot of people. But then I find out the winners, they were fishing less than 8 feet of water the whole tournament. And this lake, I had never really fished that shallow because the lake is so clear. And you can see down 12, 15 feet on a calm day in this lake. Even windy days, you can still see down 8 feet. You know, it's a zebra mussel lake, kind of your typical west central Minnesota lake, very clear, very deep. But these guys found tons of big walleyes up shallow. I mean, they said they threw back 20 fish on day two. Like, they weren't just getting, you know, those one or two, those couple big bites. They were rifling through 20 to 22 inches looking for 26 and 28 inches. I couldn't believe that. My mind was blown. So I kind of took that personal, and it kind of lit a fire in me. It was like, you know, you think you know everything, but you realize you don't. So I realized there's a big population of big fish up in these shallows, not only in this lake, but other lakes that I really had never tapped into. I kind of made it my mission to figure them out. And I mean, it didn't take us more than a week, and we kind of unlocked the shallows for us. Like I said, we'd go out and we were averaging anywhere from, I'd say, 10 to 15 fish a night. If we fished all day, easily 20 to 25 fish, all less than 12 feet of water. And our average was like 22, 23 inches, with our higher end being a lot of like 26 and 27 inch fish. My goal was to kind of figure out, really dial in that shallow bite, and I'm pretty proud to say I think we did that.
That makes it a lot easier to hang up the fall season, though, doesn't it? I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at. You feel that too sometimes, where it kind of, you're more ready for like the next thing, the next season, or you know, the next deal when you put something to bed like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had falls where I didn't get on them, and those are the falls, you know, I'm still trying to get the boat out when it's snowing, you know, mid-November, and the access is icing up, but I haven't gotten my fill yet. I haven't, like you said, met my goals. But this year, the fishing was so good for, like, I'm not exaggerating, like 6 weeks straight, we absolutely just pounded them. It kind of helped me just kind of, like you said, ease into the transition a lot better. I felt a lot more comfortable kind of winterizing all my open water gear, maybe a couple weeks earlier than I normally would or would like to, but having such the smash fest we did for that long, I'm content is probably the best word I can use.
Yeah, man, I think that's good. You know, that, like, that kind of a message. And, you know, you touched on something earlier. I'm going to kind of bring up a little bit of a topic that's, you know, I don't know, maybe it's sort of its own little topic, but it's been a while since I've brought up you know, kind of the learning curves of like in the value of tournament fishing, you know, not just for the competitive juices and not just talking, you know, to NWT anglers, you know, guys that travel around the state for the AIM. You know, I kind of want to have you describe a little bit, you know, the tournaments that you fish most there in the summer when you fish those FM walleyes tournaments.
Absolutely. I'm glad you were talking about this because this is really near and dear to my heart. I love tournament fishing. I have, ever since I was a kid, I always looked up to tournament fishermen. In my eyes, they were always the best of the best, and that's kind of the stage I eventually wanted to get on. So I live in Fargo, North Dakota, and in Fargo, we have FM Walleyes, Fargo Moorhead Walleyes Unlimited. It's a local club that values spreading the sport, spreading the knowledge, and encouraging others to get into walleye fishing. They're in the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. They've been around for a long time. I want to say since the 60s or 70s. I might misquote me there, but just been around a very long time. And they do three tournaments. We have a spring classic, a summer classic, and then a fall classic. And it's three tournaments on three different lakes in the west central Minnesota region here, around Detroit Lakes and Otter Tail County. We have the Spring Classic, which is on Pelican Lake in Otter Tail County. It's usually the Friday and Saturday after Memorial Weekend every year. Then we have the Big Pine Summer Shootout, which is a one-day shootout. It's the third Saturday in June. It's usually same weekend as Father's Day. And then we have the Big Cormorant Fall Classic, which is always the end of September. And our lakes over in West Central Minnesota that are all, what I like about them is they're similar but different at the same time. Similar in that they're usually the same in kind of the size structure. They're all around that kind of 3,000 to 5,000 acre lake. So not giant, but not little potholes either. Big enough to have tournaments and be able to spread the field out. And typically our fields average anywhere from 50 to 70 boats. Just kind of depends on the year, weather, what people are doing, you know. Why I love these though, and this kind of ties into tournament fishing in general, you learn so much. I tell everyone anytime tournament fishing comes up, if you've never fished a tournament before, and it doesn't matter what species the tournament is, whether it's a musky, bass, walleye tournament, or a multi-species tournament, or it doesn't matter how big it is, how big the payout is, how big the field is, where it's at, everyone should fish one tournament at least once. I guarantee you 100%. You are going to learn something. Even if, take my situation for example, that fall, the end of September is on Big Cormorant, the Fall Classic. I fished that lake since I was 5 years old. Like I said, I thought I kind of knew everything about it. I knew what the bite was going to be, how it's going to go, usually what I thought the weights were going to take to win it, be in the top 10. And I had my mind blown. You know, I realized that you don't know everything. And that's the beauty of tournament fishing. You can get humbled and you can get taught. It's the ultimate highs and lows. You can go from being on top, having big weights, having a program absolutely dialed, or you think you might know it, swing for the fence, and you completely strike out. You might zero, but you're going to learn something. A good quote, I believe it was Al Linder that said it. I heard this when I was really young. Tournament fishing is where all the innovation happens. Every new bait, every new technique usually comes from tournament fishing. From the simple fact that in tournament fishing, you have to get it done. You have to. You can't, as long as you can go out, the weather's safe, like as long as it's not blowing 30 and you're not ripping through 6-footers, it doesn't matter if it's a extreme cold front goes through, it's raining constantly, you know, maybe the day before tournament was 75 and sunny, now it's, you know, 40 degrees and blowing. As long as it's safe to go out, you have to go out and get it done, no matter the conditions. And the other thing I learned about tournaments is no matter how tough the bite is or how off you might think it is, fish aren't going. A tournament has never been won with zero weight. Someone always figures it out. There's always fish biting somewhere. It might not be a ton, but in most tournaments, you only need 5 or 6 bites, and there's 5 or 6 fish willing to bite somewhere always. And so no matter the conditions, you have to go out and get it done. And you're gonna come away from that a better angler.
The JMO Podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. But I mean, there's just so much learning that goes on with that. And, you know, to have you on, I just wanted to spend a couple minutes having you just talk about that and just promoting the opportunity. If anybody has like a local weekly league they could join or something a little bit bigger, like, you know, FM Wally's, if you're in that area, you know, just promoting it, I think is just good for the industry as a whole. And that's what I want to do. It's just, you know, and you might be in Wisconsin somewhere. You're not going to obviously, you know, sign up for the FM Walleyes Unlimited or whatever, but there's probably something like it where you're at if you just do a little bit of research. And they're, it's a welcoming organizations, all of them. They love participation, and the learning that goes on with it is just, can be monumental for people's fishing careers. And I just think that's really, really cool. So anyways, I appreciate you spilling on that.
Absolutely. You're exactly right. Like, that's how I got started in tournament fishing. I was 15 years old. I started fishing a local walleye league, Walleyes R Us, we have in Fargo Moore here as well. And it's just it's a Wednesday night and Saturday night league, 12 nights and mornings out of the year. Some weeks we fish 6 to 9 on Wednesdays, and then some weeks we fish 8 to noon on Saturdays. And they're nothing big. It's $20 entry fee per person. So you're not fishing for the cash. I mean, if you win it, you might win like $200. Yay, you paid for gas and your lunch and bait probably for the day, right? Yeah. So it's no earth shattering money, but it was a great way for me to fish different lakes that I didn't fish or didn't think to fish just on my own. It forced me to go to different places at different times of year and try different stuff. I learned so much my first year. I mean, my first year fishing that league, I pretty much only knew how to put Lindy rig crawlers, pitch jigs and shiners, and troll crankbaits at night. But then doing that league in that first year, I learned how to pull bottom bouncers in deep water with slow death. I learned how to pull lead core. I learned how to jig and wrap. I learned how to throw plastics. I learned how to slip bobber in the weeds. So it goes back to, you have, in all tournaments, no matter how big or small they are, someone always catches them. Someone always figures it out. And even if it isn't you, you can take that and apply it the next time or your next time out. You're going to learn so much. And I've met with multiple different organizations. They're all the same in that it's about fishing and being competitive. It's all about camaraderie and learning. There's so many great organizations full of great people. They want to see it, and they want to see you do well. So even though you might struggle, I guarantee if you ask a couple people, some people are going to be willing to tell you, hey, here's how we got it done. Here's what you should try next time. Here's what you should look for. You're going to learn so much. So yeah, I'm glad we're able to talk about this.
You know, I just think that, yeah, I think that's a really cool message. But I tell you what, you know, we're definitely going to caption this in some way, shape, or form that we're trying to put fall fishing to bed, open water fishing to bed, and we're going to slide into early ice. So I want to spend some time, you know, we're going to cover a lot of ground in this whole conversation. And so I'm going to slide us into the early ice thing. So now we're, you know, we've done the fall conversation. We talked about what we can learn this year, open water, but, you know, we got to kind of knock the rust out of the portion of our brain that thinks about ice fishing, because none of us have done any yet. But that being said, early ice, man, I mean, when somebody says that to you, what do you think about first, man? What just gets you fired up about early ice, man? What are those conversations like for you?
So early ice, there's two things that I always look forward to right away. One, I want to go to exactly where I was catching walleyes right before it iced up. Because they're 9 times out of 10, they're going to be exactly where you're catching them end of October, early November. I've said it many times. I've heard it said many times. The only difference between early ice and late fall is 3 to 6 inches of ice on top of those fish's heads. Not much has changed. They're still feeding hard, getting set up for when winter really hits its winter doldrums. You know, when you really get that first negative cold snap and it pushes those fish out and kind of gets them in a funk. Those first 3-4 weeks of ice season, those walleyes are still feeding hard the same way you left them when you were still in the boat. So Me, how I determine early ice to me is before people can drive out with trucks. So before you have 12, 14 inches of ice, that's early ice to me. And I usually start fishing the shallow prairie lakes in Dakotas, like last year, fish Irvin with Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Early season, that's one of my favorites, early ice. And those shallow dish bowl prairie lakes, because they're going to be in shallow, you know, 3 to 6 feet of water feeding hard. And then my Minnesota lakes, where I was catching, you know, less than 12 feet of water and those shallow flats, shallow points, they're still going to be there those first couple weeks of the season. So, and I kind of talked about it with you in our last podcast. I don't fish walleyes a ton during the ice, or I should say as much as I do open water. It's mainly about the panfish, but it's really hard for me. Like I said, those first 2 weeks of the season, it's hard for me to not fish walleyes when I know exactly where they were because I was catching them 3 weeks ago in a boat. And not at least go knock on their door and see, hey, got some food for you. All you can eat, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard to leave that. So I'll go do that, get my fix of that for the first week or two. But then I transition to panfish, perch, crappies, and bluegill. And me, early ice, it's all about just getting the fix, you know, just getting on and having success. And for that, I have a couple lakes that I fished for, gosh, that was like 10 or 11 years old, where I just know where they're going to be. I mean, I probably won't necessarily catch a 15-inch crappie or 10, 11-inch gill out of these spots, but I know I'm going to get there. I'm going to catch a ton of 7 to 9-inch gills, a ton of like 9 to 13-inch crappies. I'm just going to get my fix, you know. I'm going to start the season on a good note. I'm going to put some fish in the pail. I'm going to put a lot of fish on top of the ice, let them go again. Then I start down and, all right, where's the giants? Where's those picture fish? Where's those fish I can get really excited about, you know, those 14, 15 inch crappies, those 10 plus inch gills, those 13, 14, 15 inch perch. That's when I start dialing in the bigger fish.
Yeah. I've had some good conversations with some guys these last couple of weeks about, you know, maybe some underutilized, you know, early ice panfish opportunities where there's just some lakes that, you know, I just feel like people might be intimidated to go try a new lake when we're talking ice fishing. You know, in a boat, people are comfortable going to a new lake because you control around and find fish. And by noon, you kind of know what's up. But when you got to go walk around and drill holes, people get intimidated about early ice trying new stuff. And I mean, they only want to go back to, you know, tried and true stuff. But do you feel like you could maybe replicate what you kind of some of your experience on new bodies of water? Or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, my first time out, I go to where I said I have history, but then I do exactly what you said. I just look for what's similar. Like I have a lake over in Becker County. It's a typical bluegill lake. It's a small lake. I think it's only like 500 acres. It's very shallow. There's a couple basins, but what's unique about it, it's not a big round, it's not a bowl lake. It's like made up of like five or six different smaller sections. So there's a lot of neck down bottleneck areas. And when I found that lake early ice, those fish congregate kind of those pinch point areas. And I literally have fished that lake since I was 10 years old. And there's two spots where these fish have been every single year since I was 10 years old. I've never gone there the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season and they're not there. They're always there. I don't get giants out of there. I think my biggest crappie out of there is like 13 and a half. And I did get one giant gill out of there when I was 13, but majority of the gills I get out of there are 7 to 9 inches. You know, there's a ton of fish. But I had 2 years ago, I had another lake that I had never fished before, but it was very similar. It was a shallow lake, small lake, kind of built the same. It was made up of only like four sections. So I went over there and I just went to a spot that was very similar to my best spot on the previous lake I'd mentioned. I drilled, I think, 20 holes before I put my Vexo down, and I had 3 feet of panfish underneath me, and it was exactly the same. There was a ton of like nice 8 to 9 inch gills, and they acted the same. They were feeding aggressively. So yeah, I think a lot of people just need to understand that replication works. It's just like you said, it's not as easy doing it on the ice in a boat. You can't troll around, but the concept's the same. You just got to keep moving and checking likely spots out until you hit what you're looking for.
Yeah, man. For me, I'm just like the way you described it. I just try to be like self-reflective. And I think for me, I like to start off this ice season, you know, as early, you know, being safe as early as I can, you know, walkout access only, you know, if a guy gets out there on time. I do like starting in just good high percentage places that I've fished before, just because I feel like that's kind of a barometer for me. It's like, Like, I know that probably my second, third, or fourth outing is going to be something a little more adventurous or exploratory, but I like starting off the early ice season with, like, a spot that just kind of lets me know where I stand. I might not crush them. You know, not every year can be your best first ice experience ever. You know, every year is going to be a little bit different, but I like to go to those high percentage spots that I do have some memories on because it just kind of lets me know where I stand. And then if I don't get them good or I'm kind of disappointed with it, then I'm just that much more ready to get out again the next day or as soon as I can, you know, and do something kind of adventurous. Or if I do kind of get them, then I'm just kind of like a little bit of a peacock, you know, until I get out there. It just kind of gives you that confidence, you know, one way or another. I don't know. That's just the way I think about it. But yeah,
no, you
man.
Use the right word. It's all about confidence. Get out there, get your fix, just so you're confident in your abilities. You know, you go to a spot you've always caught and you catch me like, all right, it kind of gives you that feeling like, all right, I still got it. I still know what I'm doing, you know? So you have the confidence to go, like you said, maybe a few weeks later, thicker ice, you get a more exploratory. You're like, all right, I know what I'm doing. I can get them. Let's get them more adventurous. Let's try some bigger bodies of water, new spots. Let's see what we can make happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm all about that. And that, you know, like success is like, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's all relative, but there's no question that if you get out early on, you know, in that particular season, and everybody has high hopes for like another season, right? Like when you're transitioning into whatever's next, like you're just, once your brain switches over to it, like the anticipation is there. So that first outing, it's almost like, yeah, you just kind of want to start strong. So, you know, good decision making there. But, you know, that being said, man, I mean, we're talking about kind of how you like to attack and what fires you up about early ice. But to get kind of, you know, talk about some hands-on stuff, I mean, for you, what do you start getting prepared first, man? Like when you go out in your shop, what do you start with as far as organizing? What are you pulling out of the rafters? What are you digging out of the Rubbermaid first? I mean, are you checking batteries, this and that? I mean, is there any, do you kind of have any like rhyme or reason to that? Or do you fly by your seat of your pants getting ready?
No, yeah, absolutely. I have a set kind of a checklist I go through. First thing, I check the batteries, make sure electronics are all still good to go. I check, make sure my auger's still good. And one thing I'd recommend to everyone, just kind of how kind of state of the industry still is, you know, stuff's hard to get. Supply chains are still pretty bogged down or broken. If you need, I just bought them last week. I got extra blades and an extension for my auger. Any type of those extensions, blades, those stuff, you know, you're going to need, get it now. Just go get it now. If you know you're going to need it in January, February, get it now. Cause come January, it's not going to be there. I promise you, it's not going to be there. So I like being ahead of the curve. I went and made sure my electronics are all good. My auger's good to go. I mean, those to me are the most important tools for starting ice. You can't ice fish unless if you can't cut a hole, and then you're not going to be very successful if you don't know what's underneath you. So you need to make sure your auger and electronics are good to go first and foremost. From there, I break in my rod case. I make sure all my rods are still good. All the reels are still good. I go and get all my line I'm going to need for the season, get everything strung up, make sure that's all set. And then I kind of just lay out my tackle and see, all right, what do I need for the season? What do I still have from last season that I'm still stocked up on? What did I run out of last season? And then I make a list of what do I need and what did I miss last season? What did I wish I had for last season? What was I thinking in January, February, March? I'm like, God, I wish I would have got this, or I wish I would have had that. And then I go out and get that right away. So that usually by the time first ice hits, I'm ready to go. I don't need to go back or sort of get anything for probably a couple weeks. I make sure I'm set to go for as soon as that ice freezes up. As soon as I got 4 inches, I know that I'm stocked up, geared up, and I can walk out and hit her hard.
And that kind of gives you that confidence too. I think that's huge advice. And, you know, I mean, not some of this stuff is just like people's personalities and how they like to function every day. You're probably a pretty pointed individual. And but now more than ever, and I have this written down maybe to come up a little bit later, but I think maybe now's as good a time as any because you really brought it up, your experience in the retail. You know, I had this conversation a little bit with Matt Johnson, right? Clam, you know, but we were just talking general, like ice fishing is a seasonal thing. Production of ice fishing gear is, you know, it's a seasonal thing. There's only so much of it made. And then that those warehouses, those manufacturers, they move on and start making a different widget. So the ice fishing stuff that's on the shelves right now, once it's gone, it's gone. And it might not gone. Be the a thing, you know, and I kind of want you to talk a little bit about maybe, you know, is there like anything, any conversations that you've been having that have been kind of interesting or you feel like is just a really sound advice, you know, even beyond what you've already said? Like,
yeah, I would say for people, maybe people who don't know, I work at Shields. I worked in the fishing department for going on 8 years now. This last year I was working, in the corporate side of Shields, shields.com, but I actually just recently moved back to the Fargo store. I'm now the Fargo fishing manager once again. So I'm very deep in the retail side of things. What I would tell people is any of like the big three, what I call the big three, it's augers, ice houses, and electronics. I'll just give people a little insight. A lot of those ice houses, augers, electronics, a lot of companies are already sold out for the year. What stores have is what they are going to have. If you're thinking, I think I want it, but maybe I'll give it a week to decide. You're literally shooting yourself in the foot. I can promise you a lot of that stuff that you think is going to be there in a week or two, it's not going to be there. Ice fishing sales are already through the roof. People have been gearing up, and that's kind of carryover from last year. You know, you got to, after Christmas, a lot of shelves were empty for everything, you know, augers, ice house electronics, tackle, lures, a lot of it was gone and we couldn't get restocked. Like you said, ice fishing is very seasonal. Companies only make a certain amount because they don't want to be sitting on a warehouse full of ice augers in end of February. You know, people, a lot of places start thinking about open water come March, you know, either that they're just that excited for it or they're just sick of winter, you know? So I would tell people any of your major big purchases, get it done now. And I'd also say one tip for people, anything that's new, if it's new, you see new for this season, a lot of companies don't make a lot of new stuff just because they don't know how is it going to fare. You know, they might think they have the latest, greatest new ice house, you know, a new concept, people are going to love it. It might fall flat in their face. So companies don't make a ton of new products or don't have a ton of inventory of new products when you come into a season. So if it's new, those are going to usually be the first things to run out, especially if it gets hot. You don't want to be the guy who doesn't have the new lure that everyone's talking about, you know, 3 weeks into the season because he thought, you might have seen it at Shields first, right when we got our ice shop set up, thought, I'll wait to see kind of how people do on it. Well, by that time, it's going to be too late, man. It's going to be gone. And I'm not telling you to go out if you see a new lure, don't buy every color and every size, but if you see something new, maybe buy a color you really like. Or, you know, if you fish Lake X and you know gold's a good color, and you see there's a new lure and the size you like and they make it in gold, grab it. Just give it a try, you know. You never know. That might be the one that, you know, backpacks your whole season. That might be the go-to for your season.
Oh, yeah.
I just say don't miss out because you think it's going to be there. I'm just telling you guys, a lot of stuff is not going to be there for very long.
Yeah. And that, you know, these are kind of tricky conversations. You know, a lot of people will listen to this and, you know, historically, you know, in an idle retail environment, you know, it sounds real like, you know, we're just trying to promote stuff or we're just trying to sell stuff, you know, but I feel like this is literally just, you know, just being friendly and trying to educate buyers. And it has nothing to do with Shields. Shields, the point here is Shields is going to sell their stuff. Fleet Farm is going to sell their stuff. Cabela's is going to sell their stuff. Just don't be the person that comes in at Christmas trying to buy a gift for somebody or trying to save, you know, you save some time to buy a fish house for, you know, a family member or whatever. And then, you know, everybody's out. You can't find the one that's the right one and then just say that you didn't know. You know, if you listen to this, the real message is no matter where you shop, no matter what it is that you're looking for, you really need to dig into being a little more organized about stocking up on stuff, the right stuff. But
absolutely.
Yeah, man,
I'll say this. Well, I tell a lot of my customers, this is me being honest with them, and I kind of hang my hat on honesty. You know, integrity is very important to me. I just tell people, look, I'm a fisherman first. I'm a person first. I'm a salesman second. I'm always going to keep it real with you. And I just tell people, if you know you need it, just get it. And I understand, you know, everyone's money situation might be different. Do what fits your budget, you know, go buy what you can afford. But if you think you're going to need it, get it. And if you think you want it, I wouldn't wait too long just because it's the inventory's not there on a lot of products. Another thing I'll tell people is, you know, a lot of people condition to buy on sale or wait for the sales. Well, when you have such a low inventory of a lot of products, there's not going to be as many sales or as great a sales as you might have seen in the past. And that's not just a Shields deal. That's across the industry, no matter who you're buying from. So I just tell people, if you think you need it, buy it. And if you think you want it, don't wait very long.
Yep. Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's the message there. I think we've drove that home for sure. I'm glad we had that chance. And you know, to kind of round this out with maybe a little bit more early ice topics. I mean, for you, what does your early ice setup look like? I mean, if you're going out, say you're going to get out on some of those potholes and do some early ice hiking in.
Yeah, I keep it, like you said, as light as possible. I'm walking out. So everything that I'm bringing, I'm responsible under my own horsepower, you know? So I got a sled. I bring, my Vexlar. I bring my auger, and I have, one of those auger bits you put on a drill with one of those clam drill plates. It's very light. Thing can't weigh more than 10 pounds. So keep that very light. I bring my rod case. I do bring probably more rods than a person needs, but that's just me being OCD. I like to have a rod for every presentation or in backups just in case I break off. I hate retying. My hands get cold. My hands are the only thing that gets cold really easily, and I hate retying. So I have probably two or three rods for everything I'm going to do. So I usually go out with five or six rods. And when we're talking early ice walleyes, my go-to, I'm with Elliott Rod, so I run a 32-inch Rippin' Eyes. And I love that rod because it's a fairly stiff rod. That's because early ice fish are aggressive. So I'm using pretty big baits, and I mean, they're hitting hard, and you can catch some of your biggest walleyes early ice of the year. Cause you still have those big females doing in their fall feeding patterns, trying to get as much food in the system to help develop their eggs. So you can run into some of the biggest walleyes of your season, those first couple weeks of the ice season. So I like to be prepared for that. So I run a 32-inch Rippin' Eyes, medium heavy, and I got that spooled up with 10-pound braid, and that works for fishing in 5 feet all the way up to 30 feet. That braid's going to give you that feel, that sensitivity, but still going to hold up really well, rubbing against the edge of that ice. So that's where you're going to lose most of your fish, especially that early ice is right up against the edge of the hole. It's very hard to get fish turned early ice because there is such little ice. You might fight a big walleye for 5 minutes. I guarantee you two or at least half of that time is going to be spent at the hole just trying to get that fish's head turned. If you see that line rubbing up against there, it just puts the fear of God into you when you have an 8-pound walleye literally 5 inches from you, and you're just seeing that big head shaking. You're seeing your line just rub constantly against the side of the hole. So I use braid as a main line, and I'm always using a fluoro leader just for that abrasion resistance. And then as far as lures go, like I said, I like to fish aggressive. Those fish are looking to feed aggressive, feed big. So I'm typically using, you know, 1/4-ounce spoons, bigger glide baits, like 5/16-ounce or 3/16-ounce jig and wraps, Chiquita minnows, you know, big rattle baits, like a number 5 and number 6 rip and wrap. Something that those fish can, they see it, they hear it, they know it's there, and they see that it's a big, easy meal that they can just gobble up, and they know they're going to be good for the rest of the day. So that's kind of my go-to setup for early ice walleyes.
You're developing a pretty unique career with, you know, you're really just, you know, your pedigree, like you say, you're just a fisherman and you have that consumer mindset and you just like to get out and fish, but you have this retail experience and yet you're good enough for sure, first and foremost. And you have the opportunities that you've seized and taken to do some tournament fishing that is competitive, that has taught you so many things, and you know what those things are. And I think that you're a really smart fisherman, Jaden, and I really enjoy our conversations together. We're going to have to continue this on at some other point but
I fully understand. I appreciate the opportunity, Taylor. I always enjoy talking with you and Jason anytime I can. Really appreciate the kind words. And like you said, a bit, I'm just a guy who loves the fish, man. I've loved them since I was a kid. Nothing else interests me. I just love fishing, being outdoors, and I love the fish themselves. I have so much respect for the resource. I just, my favorite part of fishing is literally just getting that fish up and just holding in my hands, just looking at them. It just puts a smile on my face every time.
I love it. And, you know, I'll definitely have to fit this in some way, shape, or form, but just, you know, promote your socials, you know, especially your Instagram. Your Instagram stories, I think, are really fun to keep track of, and people get to know that you're out there all the time grinding on the lake and, you know, seeing some nice fish pictures. But, you know, just seeing that big smile on your face, it just, you know, it's really contagious. So anything that you want to promote whatsoever or anything that you got on your mind, go for it.
Yeah. You can follow me on Instagram at Jaden Thomas Fishing, J-A-D-Y-N, and then Thomas spelled as normal. Go ahead and give me a follow. I like following people back. I post to my story a lot. I just like people to follow along on the journey of what I'm doing. I post the good and the bad. I do not kill them every time. And if you see me go out and you don't feel a lot, it's because I'm not doing well. I'll be the first to tell people that. And that's kind of what I tell people is, you know, you can't be afraid to fail. I definitely am not. I post actual posts every now and then. I kind of wait to do posts. I like telling stories with that compared to just, you know, throwing up a hero shot every other week. But yeah, if you follow me along, feel free to always send me a DM too. If you got questions, just want to talk fishing. I love talking fishing. That's why I have the job I do. And to promote that a bit, once again, I said I'm one of the fishing managers in Fargo. So if you're ever in town, feel free to come through the Shields and Fargo, come to the fishing shop. You can buy some stuff from me, or you don't even got to buy anything. You just want to come and, you know, talk the talk of fishing for 10, 20 minutes. I'm always willing to do that with people. I love talking fishing. I love everything about fishing. I literally can't get enough.
This is awesome. I appreciate it on short notice, and I'll let you back to it.
Appreciate it, my man. Hey, you take care.
All right, we'll talk to you.
Sounds good.